Pyrrhus of Epirus. Pyrrhus arrives in Italy. Now, when we left off last time, Pyrrhus was still thinking about going into Macedonia, but that completely disappeared. And he'd given the Italians a pretty stiff set of requirements. But ultimately, the Italian Greeks accepted his terms. And of course, his failure to overthrow Ptolemy finally persuaded Pyrrhus to commit to the Italian expedition. After due consideration of two opportunities fortune had presented to him, Pyrrhus opted for what he considered the more promising target, which was Italy. But even before he accepted the Tarentines' offer, Pyrrhus was looking around for further prospects of conquest. Now, Sicily had been unsettled since the death of the self-proclaimed king Agathocles of Syracuse in 289. His alliance with the Greek cities had fallen apart. Pyrrhus had a potential claimant to Agathocles' crown within his own family, namely his son Alexander, who happened to be the grandson of the dead king. Prospect of following up his campaigns in Italy with a supposedly easy conquest of a divided Sicily proved irresistible to Pyrrhus. He reasoned that with the wealth and the forces of the Western Greeks behind him, he could then reconquer Macedonia and Greece. Like all ancient rulers, of course, Pyrrhus consulted not one oracle, but both of the oracles before making his final decision. And the responses, of course, were ambiguous. Now, the Epirot oracle at Dodona stated, quote, "You, if you cross into Italy, Romans shall conquer," end of quote. At the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, they responded circumspectively that Pyrrhus could defeat the Romans. Pyrrhus, natural enough, chose to interpret the answer positively. Quote, "For desire is very apt to deceive one," end of quote. Well, it doesn't appear to be great from his standpoint, but you can make out of him whatever you want. To further sweeten the deal, Ptolemy Soranus offered him the use of 5,000 Macedonian infantry, 4,000 cavalry, and 50 elephants for a two-year period. The last two figures are possibly an example of Justin's historian propensity to error, because Pyrrhus took only 3,000 cavalry and 20 elephants with him to Italy. No doubt Ptolemy saw this as a relatively cheap and easy method of removing the threat of the Epirot king. He could then turn his full force against his other rival, and Pyrrhus's former ally, Antigonus Gonatas, the son of Demetrius. Now, to begin the campaign, and to prepare his allies, Pyrrhus sent his most trusted advisor, Sinis, and his general Melon. They headed to Tarentum with 3,000 soldiers who were to act as the garrison. Their presence would also serve to weaken the influence of the peace party within the city. Sinis was a Thessalian with a reputation for great wisdom. He had been a pupil of Demosthenes, the famous Athenian orator who'd been a major opponent of Philip of Macedonia. He was one of Pyrrhus's most trusted and effective ambassadors. The king claimed that he had won for him more cities by his eloquence than by his own arms. Pyrrhus also detained a number of the Tarentine delegates in Epirus, claiming he wished to discuss further matters with them. In reality, they were hostages held to further guarantee their city's loyalty. And this, of course, is pretty standard operating procedures. They're not necessarily being thrown in the prison. They're being well taken care of. Just a little insurance so that the people you're dealing with don't cheat on you. Now, Sinis' arrival gave the pro-war Tarentines the political ascendancy, and therefore they removed Agis from his office. While Sinis used persuasion, Melon used force to ensure the Tarentines' loyalty. He placed his garrison in the city's Acropolis and took command of manning of the walls. These measures ensured that the Tarentines kept to their agreement, sending supplies to the garrison and, of course, money to Pyrrhus. The arrival of Pyrrhus's advance force had one immediate effect. The Roman commander, Lucius, decided to withdraw his invasion force. While marching along the coast, he was ambushed in close terrain by both the Tarentine fleet and the Tarentine army. He suffered heavy losses to both the artillery on the warships and the missiles of the light infantry. He eventually made good his escape by the ruthless stratagem of using captured Tarentines as human shields. Now, once this initial force had been sent out, the Tarentines then sent their fleet to Epirus to transport Pyrrhus's army. Antigonus may have also supplied ships. Perhaps he too wished to speed the departure of Pyrrhus. In early 280, Pyrrhus and his army crossed over to Italy. The force embarked consisted of 20 elephants, 3,000 cavalry, 20,000 heavy foot, 2,000 archers, 500 slingmen. Most most of the heavy foot would have been the Macedonians and the Epirot pikemen, although some may have been mercenaries. Now, at this point, I'd like to talk a little bit about what's facing each other, the Romans and the army of Pyrrhus. And I'll go into more detail on each one in their own separate podcast. But this is the first time, with Pyrrhus coming into southern Italy, where the Roman legion comes up against the Greek phalanx, or the Macedonian phalanx. Now, it's a little weaker than you would normally have found if you compared Alexander's army, Philip II's army, and some of the bigger armies of the successor kings, because there's not a lot of cavalry. You know, and under the various successor kings, you'd have battles against one another, and you'd have two large forces of cavalry, one with the elite, one with the semi-elite, and you'd have the heavy infantry in the middle. And basically, the heavy infantry just kind of pinned each other in place, and the main battle then took place with the two cavalry forces. And even though elephants were used, they really weren't that successful, with the exception of the use of elephants with the defeat of Antigonus and by blocking the cavalry from returning to the battlefield. But you're going to see that even though Pyrrhus's two wings of cavalry are relatively weak by comparison, he has two major advantages. One of them is that the Romans have never seen elephants, and that's going to be a major problem because that means their horses have never seen, heard, or smelled them. And I'm going to talk about the elephants that Pyrrhus uses next time. But that's going to unnerve the Roman cavalry. The other thing is the Romans have never fought heavy pikes. They are close encounter gladius sword fighters. Throw some spears, go in with the sword. Sarissa that the Macedonians are using is 16 feet long, and that is going to require some adjustment. And if there's one thing the Romans are really good at, it's making adjustments to those things. For example, at Heraclea, the two infantry lines fought each other to a draw. The battle was decided when Pyrrhus's elephants routed the Roman cavalry. Then at Asculum, 2 days later, the legions decided that they would fight in the woods in the scrubland, as their open formations, because they're fighting in maniple formations, gave them the advantage in broken terrain over the dense ranks of the phalanx. Pyrrhus, realizing this, succeeded to shift the battleground to open level field, where his masses and shocks of pikemen and elephants could carry today. But Libius reports that Pyrrhus himself acknowledged the advantage of fighting in maniples. And by the way, the Roman legion is divided in the maniples of 400 men. Later on, the time of Julius Caesar and Marius, there'll be 500. There'll be cohorts. The maniples are increasingly able to articulate. And so you're actually going to have Pyrrhus using some of them in his phalanx. And what he does is he will intersparse maniples of his Italian allies between his phalangite subunits. Nevertheless, the weakness of the Roman legion at this time is going to be put on display, because the Romans were great swordsmen and they inflicted heavy casualties, but they were always at a disadvantage of the 16-foot Sarissa. And of course, their inexperience with war elephants caused panic among the cavalry and the infantry, but they will eventually work that out. The military system that fought Pyrrhus to a strategic draw by 277 BC and then bloodied him at Meleventum in 275 would eventually run up his casualties to the point that Pyrrhus decided that it wasn't worth the cost. And that's when he'll head on over to Sicily. So you'll see how the Romans will eventually, we will see how the Romans adjust to Pyrrhus's system. For example, one of the things that they'll do is they'll create their own unit to deal with the elephants. Some of the men will, their job is to take out the mahout, the driver. Some of the men's job is to take out the men on the castles on the back that are got the long pikes and the arrows. Others' job is to antagonize the elephant. They have a couple of guys with axes trying to chop its trunk off, because the Romans, once the elephant was detrunked, really didn't have any fear of it. And then there's a group who are attacking it with spears and fires and attacking its genitals to try to get it enraged and turn it into a different direction, because if the elephant gets upset, it will forget whose side it's on and run through and smash anything in its path. So they can be a two-edged sword. When they get out of hand, they can be troublesome. And so the Romans will do that. And then once Pyrrhus leaves, they'll forget about elephants until it's time for Hannibal to come up. So anyway, when we come back next week, I want to talk a little bit more about Hannibal's elephants and his problem in getting them to Italy in the first place. Now, the sources for this, Plutarch's Lives by Plutarch. We also have The Wars of Alexander's Successors, Volume 1 and 2 by Bennett and Roberts, Pyrrhus of Epirus by Champion, History of Rome by Livy, Epirus, Geography and History and Topography by Hammond, War in the Hellenistic World by Herodotus, Ancient Warfare, Volume 13, Issue 1. There's an article in there called The Roman Army at the Age of Pyrrhus, The Rise of a Superpower by Michael J. Taylor. And then the Ancient Warfare, Volume 6, Issue 4, where we have an article, The Army of Pyrrhus, The Deployment at Asculum by Nicholas Secunda. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, SummaHistorica.com or HistoryAccordingToBob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.